it appears that there must have been a pre-Vedic period. If you read the Veda, even the first Sukta itself, you speak of Nutanaihi Purvaihi, the old, the ancient ones, and now the Nutan ones. So already a new period had come. Vedic age was itself a new age, according to them. So there must have been a pre-Vedic period. And in pre-Vedic period, there must have been great developments. Sri Aurobindo finds that this text of the Veda cannot be the beginning of an age, because there is so much of ripeness and perfection. Even, for example, in the very first Sukta, the description of Agni, the very concept of Agni and the epithet which is given, it cannot be primitive. It must be accomplished. Agnir hota kavikratuhu, kavikratuhu, satya chitra shravastama. Even this one sentence, so well chiseled, metrically so perfect, poetically so powerful, mantric, which can affect the experience in the individual who hears it. Even the concept kavikratu, what is kavikratu? It's not an ordinary concept at all. In the West, one of the great theories which even now Western thinkers pride on is Socratic doctrine of virtue is knowledge. What exactly is the idea of virtue is knowledge? According to Socrates, virtue is a right action which flows from true knowledge. Virtue is knowledge. That is, you cannot be virtuous unless you are seated in knowledge. In fact, the whole theory is very well expounded when you go to Republic of Plato, where in the Republic there is a famous simile of the den. According to me, both Socrates and Plato are disciples of Upanishads and the Vedic knowledge. This is my personal view. I don't want to controvert now, but if you read Socrates and Plato quite closely, and if you understand that there was a great commerce between India and Greece in those times, and if you admit that Vedic literature is anterior to Socrates and Plato, then it can be quite at least plausible that the Vedic concepts, Upanishadic concepts, had already migrated to the West, to Greece. And this doctrine itself, according to me, is a great proof. You go to Veda, Kavikratu, and you take Socratic doctrine of virtue is knowledge, and Plato's exposition of virtue is knowledge. What is the simile? It is a wonderful simile that he gives. Plato says, imagine a cave in which there are pillars, and to the pillars some slaves are tied so that they can look only in one direction. On that direction there is a wall, and behind these prisoners there is a fire. What will happen? What will be the vision and understanding of these slaves as far as the experience of the world is concerned? For them, shadows will be the only experience of the world. They will not be able to see even themselves because they are tied. They can only see on the wall shadows because there is a fire behind. So because of the light and because of the intermediate bodies which are here, they will only see the shadows. He says the whole world as we are like slaves who are tied to the pillars. And whatever experience of the world we have is only experience of shadows. Our experience, there is nothing substantial in it. All shadowy experience. Then he says, if one of them, however, succeeds to untie himself from the pillar and he moves out and goes out of the cave and suddenly finds a tremendous sunlight and the sun, glorious sun, what will be his boundaries of his imagination and his experience? Imagine for the first time in your life, we are only seeing the shadows. Suddenly you find a huge world outside and marvelous sunlight. Now, Plato says that the man of knowledge is a man who has liberated himself from the pillars, gone out of the cave, gone into the outside wide vision of the world, in which sun is raining all over. He says that is the knowledge. In fact, in Plato, sun itself is a symbol of knowledge. As in Veda, sun is a symbol of knowledge. When we speak of Gayatri Mantra, where Savitri is addressed, Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yo Na Prachodaya. So when you recite that, what is that? It is Savitri, the light, the supreme light, Varenyam Bhargaha. So that light is in Plato, it is one of the best pieces of Republic, is this den of the simile of the den. And there he describes sun as a symbol of knowledge. And he says, one who has liberated himself is a man of knowledge. Only he can do actions which are virtuous. Virtue follows from one who has seen the Surya, the knowledge. One who is established in knowledge, only he can see the light, the right action. Now this is Kavi Kratuhu. What is Kavi? Kavi is one who has known. According to the Vedic understanding, Kavi is the seer. A Kratu is action, will to do. So one whose will to do is inspired by true knowledge is Kavi Kratu. And Agni is described as Kavi Kratu. If you want to understand the real meaning of Agni, surely it is not this fire, physical fire, it's symbolic. Just as in Plato also, sun is only symbolic. Agni, that is fire, which is now physically seen to us, is actually a physical symbol of a true Agni, which exists according to the Veda. And the whole Agni Shastra of the Veda, Agni Vidya of Veda, is true knowledge of Agni. What is Agni? Agni is supposed to be the master of the earth. But why? And yet it is the Agni which was found in the waters by the gods. Although he is supposed to be reigning the earth, yet it is according to the Veda, Agni he was found in the waters by the gods. So what is this Agni? There are many symbolic meanings of the whole Shastra of Agni. In due course of time, if you have time, we shall do it. But this is a very important doctrine of Agni, and the description of it as Kavikratu is extremely important. This concept cannot come easily to anybody, even a primitive man. Primitive man doesn't know what is knowledge and what is action, what is virtue, what is right action, what is wrong action. It is only a perfected seer, one who has attained to the highest knowledge, who can really say Kavikratu. This concept cannot arise just like that. And the very face of it is not primitive. The whole Western idea that Veda is a primitive scripture is entirely false. Right from the very first Sukta tells you, it is not so. And then, The next word, satya shitra shavastama. Imagine, tamaha means highest. Now nobody can speak of the highest unless you have gone above the highest. You can speak of the highest peak on the world because you can fly beyond the peak of the Himalayas. Then you can say this is the highest. Nobody can speak of tamaha, supreme, unless that accomplishment is reached by somebody. And this refers to what tamaha or what? Satya Shetra Shravaha. Every word is so important. Shravaha. What is Shravaha? Shravaha is a capacity to hear the divine word. What is called Shruti comes from this word Shru. According to the Veda, there are two great faculties which arise in a state of consciousness when you go beyond mind. As long as we are in the state of mind, we hear and see by senses. But nobody has inquired what is actually sensation. If you look into the real functioning of the lights and the sights, it's a miracle. Mere eyeballs and the light coming on it, and you say, I see. What is this sight? It's a mystery. And why is it different from hearing? What is hearing? Why does hearing differ from seeing? And vice versa. What is this? That is because according to the Veda, the seeing and hearing are not actually sensuous. In our present state of consciousness, they are instruments of our senses. But originally, sight and hearing are supernormal. And when you go higher, what you call hearing is heard in that consciousness. The world which is parame vyome, the words which are in the ether, highest ether, those words go on vibrating and they are heard. When those words are heard, shravaha and tamaha, the highest words which are heard. And that is why these words which are satya chitra, they are full of truth. There is no mistake in it. When I see this flower with my own eyes, I have seen the real object. There is no question about it. Even here there can be question because even dream I can see a flower. And I can doubt whether it is dreaming or awaking. But there is a stage when the prisoner comes out of the cave and sees the sun, he has no doubt that there is light. The truth is self-evident. That self-evidence of the truth, knowledge, it is that which is spoken of in the Veda in the very first sukta. Satya, and that too chitra, that is another word which is extremely important. Satya chitra shavastama. Chitra is variety. The truth can be experienced variously. This can come only at the stage of synthesis. When so many truths are seen, in Jainism, Anekantavada is very much praised because you can see truth from many sides. According to me, this doctrine is derived from Satya Chitra. Reality is many-sided. When you see an elephant, it has many sides. Therefore, it's a trunk and the tail and the pillars and so on. The story of the blind man seeing the elephant and describing several different ways. It's the same object but described variously. So, Veda recognizes that the truth is described and experienceable variously. That is why ekam sat vitra bahudha vadanti is a part of the chitra. If truth was only one-sided, the word chitra has no meaning, and satya and chitra together would be quite incoherent. It's a profound teaching that truth can be seen variously, can be experienced in various ways. And that is why the Vedic truth is not rigid. If Indian culture has remained flexible, if it is only Indian culture which has welcomed Islam and Christianity with a kind of open hands, as no other culture has done, that is because this idea of Satya Chitra has been throughout woven into the blood veins of India. India is so Catholic, it knows truth can be various. Truth is not a rigid monotone. The very concept of truth is a different concept, which is sometime, if you have time, we shall discuss it. What is truth? But here, only the idea of what is Satya Chitra Shravastama. Imagine the Vedic Rishi describing Agni as Kavikratuhu Satya Chitra Shravastama, and then Devo Devebhir Agamat. He is the one God who, when he comes, all other gods come. This is another secret of the Vedic knowledge. What is in the God of in Agni? That when he comes, all the other gods come. This is also a secret knowledge of the Veda, so that you need not call all the gods. Don't invite all the gods. You just invite Agni, and the moment Agni comes, all the gods will come. This is a those who don't believe in gods, they will think it's all poo-poo it. But those who are profound, who have got time to think about, who want to have experience, gods are living realities. If Hanuman can give an answer, if Hanuman can give an answer to your prayer, it is because Hanuman, as Sri Aurobindo himself said, Hanuman is an immortal, vital force devoted to the divine. He is alive. He is immortal. Therefore, he can answer. I mean, it's not merely when you speak to Hanuman. And in India, even common people have experiences of Hanuman answering their prayers. It's a fact. I mean, you go to millions of people in India who have worshipped Hanuman and they have got answers. It's a fact. Ganesh, for example, is a reality. Why Ganesh is being worshipped? It's not a superstitious belief in a kind of grotesque figure. Actually, mother once said to me, she has seen Ganesh, who comes here. She says, Ganesh comes to me here. And with the same figure as India imagines him to be, same elephant trunk, mother has herself, she has told me that she has seen Ganesh coming here in her room. And mother used to keep an image of Ganesh near herself because she is very pleased about it. So mother said that he comes here. Mother said, he is my child. And he comes to me. So, this is a real experience. Agni as a deva, as Agni is a god, the modern mind will poo-poo the idea of god, of avatar, of devas, gods. But that is a very superficial view of reality and what this world consists of. That the world is wider than what we can imagine. World as mystery is greater than what we can experience. It is one of the first lessons of the Vedic knowledge. Reality is adbhutam, is really wonderful. I think I'll stop here today and we shall meet tomorrow. All right.